welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Mark, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for inviting me, Scott. It's always good to get in front of a new audience.
I'm going to give you the pressure introduction now because this is a sincere introduction. When I started doing this maybe 4 years ago now, there was a number of guests that I definitely wanted to have on. Wasn't brave enough to ask from the outset to kind of work up to, you know, to a number of episodes and feel confident about it. And you were on my original list, and it's taken me nearly 100 episodes to get the confidence to actually reach out and say, look, would you mind coming on sparing an hour? And I did do that. And, you know, within a couple of minutes, you'd reply back and said, yes, no problem at all. So, Mark, I'm so grateful for you saying yes, and it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
No, you could have asked earlier, Scott. It's always one of those things. I mean, it's for me, it's not about the podcast or anything else. And you know, who have you had on before? It's look, if someone's reaching out because they feel their listeners could get value from it, then I'm all up for that.
Top man. It was definitely my insecurities more than anything else. You know, like, I think I've listened so much of your stuff that you've done, other podcasts and other things that you've done and bits and pieces, that you come across as a person, and this is a massive strength, like you kind of matter of fact, organized to the point, and I thought, I've got to have my game in order to be able to ask the right questions. And I think that's a compliment to the stuff you've done and what you put out there in the public domain for us to listen to.
Yeah, that's always a challenge, Scott, isn't it? Because I, you know, a lot of people say, well, you do psychology. I said, well, everyone does psychology. If you think about it, you think and act on it. But, you know, I don't. But also what I want to do always is provide people with applicational tools that I know I've tried and tested that actually anyone at any level can actually go away and do something with. And making things simple is often the toughest point, but also not reading it from an academic paper, although they have value, is going, actually, has this been tried and tested on the ground, mixed abilities, you know, does it really work? And only when I've done that do I share anything, go, okay, give this a go. If that's your problem, give this a go. There's no guarantee, but actually it has been shown to have a positive impact. So my stuff always been, can you take and do something with it? And if you commit to it, will it have an impact? If it's yes, then I'll share it. If it's no, then I'll find a different way.
And I think that's a bit that resonates so well with me, Mark, for stuff that you put out there, because you do have a way of making these things kind of just make sense, you know, and like, to me, it's like, oh yeah, now I get it. Like, that's what I was kind of thinking, but you put in a way that actually I can go and do that practically in the real world, you know? So, well, I don't want to take you too much down the road before we get into the proper meat of the conversation today, which is going to be really about, I think, essentially around like how we can help as coaches kind of create these self-managing teams. And I know, you know, that's part of many things that you do, but you've got some ideas and views and some great suggestions around that. Before we get into that conversation, just a bit about you, if you don't mind, Mark. I know you do a lot of this stuff as well, and you can listen to 100 podcasts where you said the same thing probably, but just for our listeners, a bit about your journey. What did you currently do, if that's okay?
Yeah, so the website gives you more if you want it, which no doubt we'll share at the end. But my journey has been over 30 years now. So the short version is I joined the military in 1983, thinking everyone be fit and motivated. And quite quickly, I realised that many weren't. There were anything but that. So I got a bit lost, bit dejected, lost motivation. And then I met some guys that were particularly one guy, Budgie Burgess, who came from Commando Forces, and all of a sudden he saw me for me. And he said, come on, let's go for a run. Let's go and train. Look, what next rep, next step? And that attitude just to push beyond, irrelevant of your rank. And he was the first person I'd met that actually he looked at me as an individual. He didn't look at my rank, didn't look at how other people saw me. He looked at who I could be and the potential in me, and he didn't have bias. And that really surged me on. So I went and did the commando course, was successful there. I then became a physical training instructor. Then I, after serving just after the Gulf conflict and Operation Haven, I was promoted to go to recruit training. And I thought, highly fit, motivated. And each platoon had a physical training instructor, and there was normally three or four platoons. And you'd have them for 10 weeks. You'd do all the training you wanted to. It wasn't really strict then. You could decide what training you wanted to do with them. And at the end of 10 weeks, you had a log race, endurance race, obstacle course, all these tests. And for the first 18 months, my platoons won every single one. So I'm thinking, I'm the man. I am brilliant at what I do. And, you know, all the platoon commands going, let's have Bennett, let's get him. And then on one of the pass-off parades, it was one of those big light bulb moments that I've had through the journey. when a parent came up to me and says, "Oh, you're Corporal Bennett. My son doesn't stop talking about you. You've really changed his life." And all of a sudden, my light bulb went off as a negative, because I realized I'd also changed the life of every single recruit that had not passed in, that had failed to get through. So I started to really question, actually, was I any good? And what my perception was at the time, I was pretty good at the people that were engaged to me, that had some mental robustness, that would kind of, I'd say something and they'd do it and they'd keep up. But I wasn't very good at the people that didn't have that engagement, that confidence, that mental robustness. And yes, I may have changed a few, but I didn't change enough. So I, at that point, which was early 90s, I decided I needed to change what I did or change the way I did it. So I started to commit to finding ways. Remember, no internet. I didn't have anyone I could turn to. So it was just like, I knew what I was doing is wrong. I just didn't know how to do it right yet. And yet was a big word. So I went on this journey. I started to lose competitions. And you can imagine the peer pressure I had then. But I knew I couldn't go backwards. I just didn't know what it was yet. But I had to keep committing. But the platoons were getting bigger that were passing in. And then I started to win all the competitions again. And the pass-off numbers proportion were higher again. So I started to find a way. And then building up, I transferred to the Armed Physical Training Corps. I got to a point then when I was running the Commando Training Wing. And then I started to do on my holidays, weekends, I started to work with pro teams. So Sail Sharks, Saracens, Super League, Warrington Wolves. And when they came down with the pre-seasons, I was still knew what I was doing. But I found it difficult to explain it so others could do it when they went away. And my next negative light bulb came off was, I think it was Warrington Wolves. And we had legends like Alan Langer, who was household name in Australia. And they said, "Oh, this is fantastic. It's really changed the way I'm thinking. I've learned so much about myself and my teammates." But then within 2 weeks, Alfie was calling me up saying, "Mark, it's all gone backwards again." And when I went up, I could see it reverted back. And the next light bulb went off when I realized, well, hang on a minute, it's no good me having an impact on them when they're there if I haven't shifted the people that are controlling the environment. So then I realized I needed to find it a way to train the coaches so they learned and understood and can apply these principles to support the environment and the change we wanted when I wasn't there, the unsupervised part. So that took another 6 years. And then I started to find a ways. And now ongoing, I mean, there is no one that challenges what I do more, but it's been over 30 sports now, World Olympic, European champions, age group national teams, in America, loads of work, universities, colleges, schools, inner city, rough schools in Cleveland and in London, grassroots all the way down to 4-5 year olds, all the way through the age groups. So yeah, it's been a long journey. The one thing I've taken from it is where I go into new sports and I go, "Well, Mark, we're different." The one continual is human beings. And my stuff's about the human being. And not just the human being as a player athlete, the human being as a coach, the mentor. So that's where it came from. My statement I've always said is the greatest athlete development is coach development. And I see my stuff as software, if you like. And I see the technical, tactical, physical as the hardware. And I think most coaching courses might talk about the software, but when it comes in percentage of developing and helping coaches be skillful in it, it's very, very limited and minimal. So we get people that could run 300 drills, if you like, or, you know, talk about the game, but they find it very difficult to engage Johnny. Or actually, when they ask Sarah, "What do you think there, Sarah?" Sarah never says anything in a group, but you get the same players always saying the same thing. And that happens all the way up to the senior level, by the way, not just at grassroots. So my stuff is about how can I develop the confidence and competence in the coaches to develop their software so they can scan better, they can make better judgments, and they can better influence the people around them to be more confident, to make better decisions, to accept peer interventions, to acknowledge it, to act on it, but also to have the confidence to speak more effectively. So that's kind of the short version, but there is so much on pressure loading, et cetera, in the elite level, how to differentiate between learning, performance, and competition. But the grassroots is how you can have a positive impact on the people you're coaching, that they remained with them once their time with you is finished.
It's so beautiful to hear, because it's almost like this laser beam of stuff that you've obviously equated together over 30 years that drives through so many different environments, right? Whether it's corporate, sports, kids, yeah, development, like, and it's just, you know, it's not a magic bullet because there's no such thing, right? Because I'm sure there's lots of hard work, graft and stuff that goes into still achieving this stuff. But it is a laser beam of focus that actually, if you can get that stuff right, and also the other stuff, that the hardware stuff, is a lot easier to get into place, right, if you can focus on the software.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's the biggest challenge for people because, you know, when we talk about the coach at anywhere, whether that's the mum and the dad coach or the elite coach, is there is a level of pressure that actually go, well, I want to see results. And everyone around you is going, well, actually, you know, you need, the players need to do this, etc. But one of the challenges is that if you want to change someone else, the first change has to happen with yourself. Yeah. So are you giving yourself the patience and respect you deserve to support a change in something you can't yet do? And understand, when you're committing to something new, you won't be good at it initially. But if you keep going for it, you will get better. And when you do that, then you reap the rewards. And I don't think we put enough time and support on ourselves and space to understand, like, if I'm going to change what I do, I'm not going to be great at it straight away. So set that expectation. But also set your expectation is, don't hide it. Share with everyone around you, look, I've recognized I can do better at this. So I'm going to commit to something I can't yet do. So I'm not going to be great, but this is what I'm doing. And I'd love you to support me in that. Now, I get coaches to share that with young kids, because what you're doing is then you're being the role model. But I think it's so important to understand, we get so focused on, well, they're not doing that, how can I impact them? How can I get them to speak more, whatever? Well, understanding, if you're trying something new, it's you need to put the support in first, and don't put high expectations on yourself that all of a sudden you're going to be like the Matrix and you screw it in the back of your head and you can do it. That's not reality. So a lot of people give up long before they achieve the success, because they're not seeing the results very quick. And then they think, oh, others are looking at me, I'm not as good as I were, so I'm going to revert back. Well, if you revert back, you're never going to grow. You're going to have the same problems you have now 10 years time.
Exactly.
So that transition of change is the most important element, and getting support in that area, whether it's from other parents, from other coaches, from the players. Don't hide it, share it, get people to see the value in it. And that's where success comes from.
So is that what PDS is, Mark?
Performance development systems. Yeah, there's two big elements to it, is developing you to be a better influencer and supporting the change that you need to embed in yourself and others to ingrain the new behaviors, the new culture, the new environment.
And today's topic that you kindly said yes to, but he didn't question me. Maybe I've been being polite, but I've kind of focused around this kind of creating self-managing teams. I mean, to me, from what I've heard, and please say if I've got this wrong, but this seems like the stuff you're talking about here. It's about how we as coaches can really help support teams that, you know, we, not that we become redundant, because we've got an obligation to facilitate the right environment, right? I guess, but almost the less we're involved, the better to some extent. Am I right in thinking that?
Yeah. So if you think about it this way, and I think this is where few people struggle, because they don't seek to understand when they hear a statement. So your aim, in my opinion, your aim as a coach should be to make yourself redundant. And when I say that, what I'm saying is, you get to a point where your aim is, they don't need me for them to do that live in a match, unsupervised, under pressure. That should always be my goal. What I don't want to do is develop what I call rubberneckers, where as soon as they're going to do something, they look over the coach, do you want me to do this? And they're thinking, what does coach want me to do now? And then when they do something, they're looking over, was that okay? So you'll never be redundant. This is the difference, because there's always layers you can build. But every time you're sharing something, your goal should be, I want you to be able to do that where you don't need me. And that's what we mean about making yourself redundant. So clearly the players' confidence in decision-making and self-reflection live are so critical to the success of that.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic. Well, look, we're going to get more into that in a minute in that world. So you've kind of got us intrigued already. I always think it's good for guests, just for our listeners to get a feel for guests about like their approach to the world of coaching and their philosophy, so they kind of get some relatableness, if you like. So you, Mark, as the coach or the trainer, whatever it might be, how would you kind of describe your approach to coaching? I know we use the word philosophy and it's a bit woody sometimes, but you know, how would you kind of summarize what you'd be if you were taking a session or group or doing some PE stuff with an individual? What's your approach to that?
I guess we took the word philosophy out and just looked at what would that look like and sound like.
Much better way.
Also, what would be my intent and purpose is, I want their brains to be working more than mine. I want to make sure that everyone's involved. I want to make sure that everyone's engaged. I need them to buy into the success and take ownership of what we agree the success is. My job is to facilitate that and not to own it. I want them to own it. So my skill and craft and commitment will always be, right, let's make sure we all see the value in it. Is everyone engaged? My ability then is, am I scanning everyone? I'm now noticing there's five people that are fully engaged and controlling every chat we have. But actually, there's a bunch that never speak. There's a bunch that are disengaged. How can I get them engaged? How can I get them involved? So the whole time, it's scanning behaviors first. And then it's me. What intervention do I need to do now to continue to achieve the success we've pre-agreed and get everyone starting to own it, not just the one, two, or three people? And that's, if you've ever spoke to any of the coaches I've worked with over the years, one thing they will say, the difficulty in this initially is their brains explode because the amount of scanning they're doing that they've never realized how much they're not doing. And now they're looking at everyone, the people off the ball, the people disengaged. And now you've got all that data, actually you see a different picture. Now the picture's different. Some people go, oh my God, now I don't know the answers because now I'm seeing things I never saw before. Because I was looking for the right answer. So I'll ask Jimmy, because Jimmy gives them the right answer. Great, that's success. Or if I keep shouting and telling them where to stand, eventually they'll show me great success. But actually, you've just moved pawns around it, you know, and who's been engaged? Who's been making the decisions? And who'll remember it?
Yeah. It's funny you say that, Mark. We obviously, I'm sure everyone's been introduced to the world of VO in the world of grassroots football more recently. And, you know, it's a great tool for recording the games. But what it showed me, and I thought I was all right at this stuff, and I'm definitely not, was the kids would play a game. At the end of the game, would give, you know, we'd give it some feedback, as you do. Pointless presumptuous at the end of the game, but we give the feedback nonetheless. Then I'd go and watch the VO, and I'd realise how pointless my feedback was, because I'd missed 8% of what actually really went on, and what I thought I'd seen actually didn't really pan out that way. And you see it so different. It's a skill in itself, I guess, isn't it? Having those scanning observational abilities to take it on. And even then, it's not easy to see everything right as a coach.
Yeah, and it's the scanning, and then it's your judgment of what intervention you're going to do and where the priority is. And often the priority is in the software, not the hardware. So, you know, let's also set expectation is success should not be that if you've got an aim of a session plan is to work a defense or something or spacing, it doesn't mean to say you're going to achieve that by the end of the session, but that's okay. That's the point. It's not about a session. It's never about a session. The only success in the session was everyone engaged when everyone's enjoying it. Did everyone see the value? Did they connect to the purpose? Because if you're doing that, then over 3-4 sessions, you'll start to see the return. But this is another point about the expectation is you're scanning. What are you scanning for? You can't scan for everything, but are you prioritizing your scanning? Right, let's look for this first. If that's a no, let's put my interventions in there. Let's not share 20 things I've seen as a coach. What's the most important? Let's just focus on that. And the other thing linked into that, which Scott, you mentioned there, when you scan and when you do the interventions, where possible, and the only time it wouldn't happen is safety, or you know there's no way they'll be, you know, they need the support, is I always use what I call player first, player last. And we need to use it all the time. So what I mean by that is over years and years from the 4 or 5 years old and at school and wherever it may be, and I'm generalizing here because not everyone does this, but this is over my experience. Players will look to coach because they're going to look for coach to say something first. And that's the one thing we want to eradicate. So the only initial word should be, okay, review that, or what do you think, or what have you got for me? So actually what you're doing then is without any clues, directions, you're going, right, I am really interested in what you're seeing. That's what I'm interested in. And I'm not interested in what you think I want to hear. I'm interested in what you think, what you're seeing, aligned to what we said success was, not everything. And then getting them to share information, and then you really listening with intent and not with no judgment. And then you can add a bit of detail. Okay, what do you mean by that? Or, okay, well, what if this happened? And then at the end, the player last is, okay, so what have you agreed, or what have we agreed? Or so what are you going to commit to? And they tell us. Then we go, great. That's it. I don't need to add anymore. But how many coaches, the conversation, they're leading it, and then looking, and then I'll chuck another leading question in, they're looking. And then even if they get the answer, the coach feels they need to say something at the end and add something. Well, all you're doing is you're extending the time of them standing around, and you're increasing the opportunity of disengagement.
It is so strange because even as grassroots coaches, volunteer grassroots coaches, where we don't get paid to do what we do, so that it's not like you feel like you've got to earn your value or give the players some value for their money, because we, you know, parents know that we're giving our time up for free, but you still feel like you've got to contribute, you've got a say, and you've got to lead and almost present like you're the center of the of what's happening, you know. And I don't think it's an ego thing for lots of coaches. I don't think it's because they necessarily want to do it. It feels like it's almost like that's how the stereotypical role of a coach is supposed to be, right? I'm at the center, things work around me, and I have control, you know, and that's often the, I guess that's the barrier, and it's a lot of the stuff we're trying to get to.
Yeah, and also YouTube, internet doesn't help because normally the only videos you'll see is a coach telling someone off or a coach dominating a motivational talk pre-match. What you'll rarely see is the great work behind the scenes of the great coaches, where it's a player stood up, coaches sat down, and the players are asking other players pre-match, okay, so Johnny, what are you going to do if this happens? What's your role here? And then that player asks another, and the coach is just sat at the back. My work is done before that pre-match. And so all we love is let's share the motivational, you know, let's share what coach is saying there. So therefore, we build up this bias. We go, well, that's what a great coach looks like. But actually, that's where you've got to break down is what is your purpose as a coach? If your purpose as a coach is to engage people and help them grow as people first, players second, then what does that look like? And if they can make decisions with confidence live first, and then they come in and go, right, this is what I saw, this is what I did. If they can give purposeful feedback, both positive and what you need to work on to other players, and if a peer can then accept that without going, oh, I don't like you or blah, 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 and actually embrace it and act on it, that's huge success. Because what are you doing to human beings then? What's that going to do to them when they get to relationships or back at school, when they walk off the pitch or the court? That's the true purpose of a coach. And if you develop that, as you've said earlier, Scott, they will learn so much easier. It will be so much easier to learn the technical and the tactical, because now they're going, coach, we got this. Or what if we do this? And you go, well, go on, show me, give it a go. Let's see. Oh, we're learning that, which links into, you know, I think the problem is as well, there's coaching styles and there's always fashions. And what's the latest coaching style? And my stuff's always been about being inclusive. So, you know, look at every style that's out there, but if it fits your needs and not wants, that's very different. Then utilize it, but utilize it still with the aim is, am I shutting the players down now or am I engaging the players? Okay, well then if I am, then that is an option I could use. And it's always that checklist in your head. Am I engaging them? And I get them to think, could they solve this without me? Do they need a clue? Well, the clue might be, okay, what if this happens? Or put make it a bit easier or harder. How can we make it harder? Ask them. How can we make it easier? Ask them. Great idea. Let's go with that. And all of a sudden, I've got these young kids going, an adult is saying, I've got a great idea. An adult's asking for my opinion and listening. You know, that's where you're going to get them coming back every week.
When you talk about coaching styles, it's funny because I worry still like that I'm choosing to adopt things that basically suit me. And it was listening to you a couple of years back talking about behaviors and actually things like that, that really changed my coaching. And it probably, did it change it? No, what it probably, it gave me confidence to coach a certain way. But obviously that's the way that it suited me. So we focus with this young team that we've had for a couple of years now around behaviors and attitudes. So we in a football environment, so we're playing soccer, but we didn't really speak about the football too much. We would talk about behaviors. So having a desire to compete, being resilient, showing confidence, ownership, leadership, that kind of stuff. So we really had these six behaviors. We had our core values, respect, effort, fun. And that was our focus. And we spoke more about those things we did about the football, the games that even bring out that kind of stuff. And it's really worked. Trust the process. We weren't worried about results. We just trust the process. But the team win things now, regularly win stuff. That was never the intention, you know. Collecting silver trophies was never the goal. It was about this life skill things. But it's like worry, even as I sit here now, having success in, you know, in quotation marks, is that have I just picked things that work for me? And actually that's why it kind of has some success. Or, you know, do you believe actually whatever your coaching style is, focusing on behaviors and stuff is good practice?
Yeah, it's always, I mean, I still do it now a lot, you know, even if I do a podcast, I'll be listening to it back to review how was I, my response to that. You know, I always still put cameras on myself when I'm mentoring. I always get the coaches, first thing you want to do is put a camera on your chest and just coach. Don't try and change, just be you and just watch it back. Don't look at the players, just watch it back and check how accurate you are in your self-awareness of what you thought you did and how you interacted,
yeah.
what you actually did. Yeah. And often, I mean, people hate doing that because people don't like the sound of their voice. That's just human nature. But the first time you've done it, the common ones is, oh my God, I talk so much. Or, oh my God, they were still running in and I was already talking. Hang on a minute. I said sprinting and now I'm looking and there's 50% walking in and I've done nothing about it. Yeah. You know, all these little things. And you go, well, okay. So then you can start going, okay, so if you could pick one thing to work on, what would it be as a coach for you? Not for the others, for you, to help you be better, and just work on that. But the self-awareness is always really important, because if you're, most people's self-awareness is inaccurate. So what I mean by that is what you think you're doing and how you're doing it in the moment is often not what the reality
what other people
is.
Think. Yeah.
Yeah. So watching a video of yourself and hearing your voice, then you've got a baseline check. Then you go, ah, that's how I am. Okay, now I know that. I might hate myself for a few minutes, but then go, everyone's going to have that experience. But now you go, okay, now I know. So now I know, what can I do with that information? And then you go, okay, so aligned to my purpose and who I want to become, what's a great coach to me? What's the number one here that if I could change this, would have the biggest impact on me? And then go, right, I'm going to pick that. And that's going to be my purpose. And I'm going to share that with everyone I can and go, right, I've recognized this. You know, this is what I'm going to get better on. This is what I'm going to do. This is how it can help me. So I don't know if you've seen some of the Evo soccer guys in Sheffield, great example, but the coach will always share their work on with the players.
Yep.
And these are young kids, you know, they work 5, 6 years old all the way up to pre-academy. And you've got young kids then at the end of a session, when you go, okay, review me, and you've got players going, okay, I thought, and we use the U at A&E, you know, exceptional, acceptable, unacceptable. And then the players will review the coach because they know the coach's work on. And I think there was a video that is shared that's young kids, I mean, they're pre-teens, and you've got one kid going, I thought you were exceptional, coach. And then the next kid goes, well, actually, I disagree with that. But then the kid quantifies it. And the other kid's not personally upset now, is listening. And they go, well, I thought you were acceptable because actually you only did 2 hot one-to-ones. One of them I saw a positive change, but the other one I wasn't sure. So I'm not sure how effective that was. This is from a young kid.
Yeah.
So then the coach is going, yeah, that's great. What did I say my work on was? And everyone's going, actually more effective hot one-to-ones. And then the coach says, I agree with you. I would agree I'm more unacceptable. So that's the level of openness and engagement of support we're talking about that I think some people are a bit fearful of. One is they feel I should have the answers. You know, I'm the coach. People should look to me. And actually, great coaching isn't about that. You look at the best coaches in the world, and not one of them will ever tell you, I know all the answers. What they will say is, I'm going to develop an environment where I have confidence in the choices I make. But actually, if I need to seek data from somebody else, I will, without a shadow of a doubt, seek it. And then if they're wrong, also the other thing great coaches do is they will stand up and they'll go back to their players and they'll say, I've just now reviewed that game or that practice. And talk about the intervention here, what it was. I got that wrong as a coach. No, but I got that wrong. This is what I've learned for that. Next time I'm going to commit to that. And if there's a, you can support me with it, there it is. Now, that's the role model we're talking about. And now if the best coaches in the world are okay doing that, when everyone's looking at them at the media, grassroots, no problem.
We should be all right, shouldn't we? Yeah, totally, totally agree. All right. Well, look, before we get into some strategies around how we can go about doing this as coaches, just let's sell the wire for a little bit then. You know, I was almost taking it for granted that actually having self-managed teams is fantastic. But let's talk about, well, why is it so good? Why do we want to create these teams or help create these environments that create teams that can look after themselves? What are the benefits?
So if you break it down into, you've heard that statement that I use, the quote is, performance is a behavior, not an outcome.
Yep.
So let's relate that to any game. Let's use basketball as an example in any game. So it's non-football, so they're going to have to think, your viewers, because they're predominantly football. So we know basketball is, if we said to someone, okay, what's success? And they go, well, to score more baskets than the opposition. There's a nice, simple, okay, great. So let's look at the attack point. How do you do that? Well, you've got to get the ball in the basket. Great. How do you need to do that? Well, I need to either dribble and get it in, or I need to do a shot and get it in. Great. Well, how do you get the ball? Well, I've got to intercept the ball, or I need the ball passed to me by somebody else. Or the ball's gone out and I get it thrown to me by one of my teammates. Okay, great. Well, what do you need to do in order for that to be effective? Well, I need to be in the right position And I need to make sure that I can see the opportunity coming and commit to that choice without fear. And I need the capability to do it. Great. So what else do you need to do? Well, I need to make sure that the person passing the ball to me is seeing that I'm open. Okay, so what do you need to do and involve that? Well, I need to be present. I can't be thinking about what happened I did 30 seconds ago. I need to be able to scan well. So I need to see where the opportunity threats are to make sure no one intercepts me. I need to then know if that person's got the ball, my teammate, I've got to know what are they likely to do and do they need to see me in order to do it. So I need to be able to, even if I haven't got the ball, to make the best choice to give myself the best opportunity of success and to give the player with the ball the best opportunity. That's decision-making right there. Great. So now we brought it back to that. So what we're saying is in order for you to be successful, to score more than the opposition, and we've just looked at one position there of scoring, you need to be aware of your state and manage your state. You need to be able to scan to see all the data. Then you need to make a judgment call based on you understanding the game and your teammates and commit to a choice without fear. So where's the decision-making coming from? That is all about the decision-making. That is all software right there. And you look at any of the best teams in the world, you look at any of the best, most enjoyable, smiley-faced grassroots kids, what they will do, there is not fear in what they do. They go for it. Now, the one thing that can help you go for it without fear is one, have more confidence in the choice you're making. And also understand that no one is going to destroy you based on the outcome or the choice you make or your execution. So we are an influence of two of them, as one of them is set that as success and then we follow it through. Give every player the confidence and skills to be able to do that, but then support that by our reactions to what they do. So now when we talk about why do we want self-managing, self-developing teams, because grassroots, if you want people to keep coming back, if you want them to enjoy the game, them being able to have confidence on committing to a choice without fear, that's decision-making. That's getting better at decision-making. If you as a coach want to get them to enjoy the game better, then build the software capabilities to allow them to play the game with confidence, irrelevant of their capability. And their capability is as good as they can be in that moment. And that's where your expectation to be as a coach as well is don't expect more than that.
You think this sometimes doesn't get picked up by coaches as much because we're so obsessed with focusing on kind of the here and outcome. Now and trying, the outcome. Yeah. So we sacrifice the longer term process for the short term outcome. And then we're constantly chasing our tails.
Yeah. And what we then do is we don't identify the source of the issue. If you look at any coach I've ever worked with, the one craft that brilliant coaches have at all levels, all abilities, is they can identify the source of an issue. That's coaching craft right there. Then you have your interventions, but your interventions are based off judgment. Your judgment's based on, can I spot the source of an issue? So therefore, if a player now, if you think about it, the outcome is the one thing you can't guarantee. There's too many variables, whether that's a weather thing, that's an opposition is just better than you, whatever it is. But what you can look at is, okay, that player now has committed to the wrong choice in your eyes. So first thing we do is, I don't know why that player has made that choice. That's the guarantee right there. So what I need to be is, I need to be interested. Now, one thing I know is, I'm just using an example, is I'm stood at a different place than that player. So that player is going to see differently than me. So that's one thing I don't know. So now I cannot make an assumption. So what I need to do is develop a rapport and give them the skills to go. And it may be I just rotate a player off or just pull him off just over here for literally for 30 seconds. Go, Jimmy, talk to me what happened over there. Now, this is where the action review process I teach with all kids, all adults is. And it's based off, what did you see? What were your options? And what influenced your choice? Now, before that, we always ask the question, did you commit? And we'd know if they've committed or not, because that's the first rule we ask of everyone. Whatever you do, just commit 100% without fear. If you do that, everything's going to be fantastic. And I will never get angry if you do that. I'll never be frustrated with you do that, because that's awesome. That's success right there. So we build that every time. And that's where our reaction will influence that as well. Because if we start shaking our head or, you know, stamping our feet when they do that, they'll go, I've just committed and now you're killing me, coach. Yeah. I'm not going to commit again. What do you want me to do? So, you know, all of that. But what we want to get to is when they come off, if I ask them, okay, what did you see? And they go, well, I saw Stevie open there in that space. And, you know, I saw that big guy really coming at me really hard. So, and you go, okay, so what options did you spot from that? Says, well, I could have ran. Don't like running against a big guy. I could have passed it back, but I wasn't sure it was behind me because I didn't look. I did see Jimmy was free, so I thought that was the best choice, and I definitely committed to it, but it didn't come off. You know, the ball went wild. Now, if a player is giving you that, and I've got five, six-year-olds doing this, by the way, so it's not as if, then what is that giving you as a coach? One, it's giving you fantastic dialogue of player first. It's then allowing you to understand where the source of the issue was. Now, I won't put you on the spot, Scott, on this, but so I'll share this time. So there was from, and again, this is the judgment, how well you listen and go, I am present, I'm all you now. It's not about anything else. It's just about that moment. From that data, I've recognized two things, major source issues, and then it can be judgment aware. One is they're not scanning, full scanning. They're not scanning behind them, which is really common. So therefore, the best choice may well have been passing back. But because the player didn't see it as an option, there's no way they could have taken it. So one intervention there is, well, actually scanning better. If I can help to put the focus on that, work on for that player is scanning better. So scan early is always the best thing. Don't wait till the ball's coming at you.
Yep.
Off the ball, you're always scanning. So now, you know, I know someone's behind me. Oh, now the ball's coming. I already know someone's near behind me. So now that data's already in. It makes it easy for me to do that pass back. So that would be my first go-to intervention. There's also backup there that I need to check with that player is, there's a capability issue of his execution. He committed, and I'd agree he's committed, but his execution wasn't great. So it's really important that I need to know, was that just one of those, you know, that kick sometimes just goes, no problem? Or is it actually there is a capability issue in that type of shot? Now, what's important for me is I want that player to keep committing to that shot because that's how they're going to get better. I may put him in opportunities to get him to do that more, not do what he can do already, but do that thing he can't yet do in the word. And also I need to support that player, he or she, in making sure that I'm really, really value and I'm really chuffed with the fact that you went with that shot you can't yet do, because keep going for them because you'll get better at them. But I love how you reviewed that. That is brilliant. So it's, you can see now just that identifying the source of an issue, not what I think the source of, but let's see what the player thinks. And if you're doing that all the time, what you'll end up doing is, and very, very quickly, I'm talking about in a few weeks, the players will recognize coach is not looking for an answer. Coach is interested in my opinion of what I saw, what options I saw, and why I went for that choice. Now, that's a game changer in itself right there.
Do you think coaches sometimes then will end up coaching the thing that's not necessarily the problem? Because in that scenario there, yeah, I can imagine people thinking, oh, it's decision-making, made a bad choice, not actually why that decision was made, and going one step further to actually, well, why was it made in the first place? But straight away, bro, this player can't make good decisions on the pitch.
and often it'll either go outcome, oh, yeah, we just need to do, you know, he needs to kick the ball more because his pass was useless.
Yeah, or technical problem or decision-making.
Yeah. Or it's a tactical element. So we go to tactical every single time. And actually, that wasn't the source then. The source was scanning.
Yeah.
So let's
put in back. Fixed problems don't exist, aren't we? We're focusing on stuff that, yeah, and we end up in the same. Yeah. Next weekend, we're saying the same thing. Why haven't we solved that problem? He can't do it. Little Jimmy's still making the same mistakes he was making 2 weeks ago, you know?
Exactly. And also then, you've just done a tactical drill and Jimmy's been 100% every single time. You're putting a match and all of a sudden they can't do it. And then you're pulling your head out, go, we've done this 100 times.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's still not scanning well.
Yeah.
But you haven't picked that up. Now, I would, all your listeners, whatever team you follow, go to the highest that you follow. Let's look at football, for example. I guarantee you nearly every football team, their scanning will be quite poor at times, particularly in the defence. So next time you watch a game, don't just look at who's got the ball. Look at the defenders that aren't having the ball when the ball gets to midfield and look where they're looking. Often what you'll find is they'll start tracking the ball too much and they won't see another player coming around the back until it's too late, then they try and react to it. And that is something that I don't think we do well enough, even at the elite level, because we'll have a psychologist or we'll have a chat about it in the classroom. But what coaches aren't doing is doing this, identifying the source of a player and going, actually, am I even scanning for the source of the issue? And then am I putting interventions in every single practice session? Or am I just talking about it post-match to go, yeah, you didn't see that player, but then we go into tech-tack again and we're not putting the interventions where we need them. So it's not just grassroots that, it's all the way through.
Well, look, you've touched on a few things here already, I'm sure, but I don't know if you can shed some more light on this or whether there's anything else you want to add in, particularly around like some of the strategies that we can adopt as coaches with our players to try and encourage this kind of self-managing of the teams. You know, let's be recognised that I've got some coaches who will be listening and getting their players for 1 hour a week, you know, on a Saturday, yeah, and they could be six-year-olds, and others might have them four times a week and they're 18-year-olds. But yeah, are there kind of things we could, practical things we could put into place to help us embed some of these stuff?
Yeah, so there's a few irrelevant of what you can do at all age groups. First thing is to give what I could call my baseline game. It's a brilliant game changer for you and for them. So all you do, and I'd recommend this even with elite teams, I get them to do this pre-season or the first time you come into a team or any time earlier opportunity. All you do is you get some whiteboards, just little whiteboards, something they can write on, and you split the team up and, you know, put bibs on them either side, whatever they are. And you put the bibs, the whiteboards, the center line, but either side of the pitch. Or you can have it the same side of the pitch, but they need to be spaced so they can't hear each other, depending if you're just one coach or you know, if you've got parents support you on this, I'll add how you can do that. And all you do is you say, right, all we're going to do is play a game. But here's what you're going to have to do with the game. We will only play for 2 or 3 minutes. And your goal is to identify the strengths and weaknesses in the opposition. That's your go. And after 2-3 minutes of playing, I'm going to blow the whistle and you're going to sprint to your board as your team and you're going to write down all the strengths and weaknesses you've seen, the main ones in the opposition, and then you're going to agree what you're going to commit to be successful against them. And I'm going to give you 2 minutes on the board and then we're going to play again for another 3 minutes. And then after 3 minutes, we're going to blow a whistle, we're going to come back to the board again. And you start off like that. So what you start to do is they start to play the game, and you'll see the first time they come in, that 2 minutes will disappear like mad, and they may not get hardly anything on the board, and you go, blow again, you've got to hold them to the time, you get again, they come in again, and all of a sudden now, you'll start to see them start to talk about things. And they'll start, right, that's the beauty of the board. Now they're writing the headings down. And however simple that needs to be, and then you're looking to see, have they come to a conclusion? So if they haven't, what you can do is you can pull them in quickly and go, right, I'm just going to add one more thing now. I'm going to give you a 30-second countdown. And when you hit a 30-second countdown, you've got to agree to what you're going to commit to. And then you push them out again. So now when they come in, after 90 seconds, you just go 30 seconds, agree what you're going to commit to. And it's just one thing. You just commit to one thing. It's not 100 things. That's really important. And then you'll start to see they start to communicate and commit to something. So what you're doing as a coach now is you're scanning to see, has everyone committed to what they agreed? So the next layer you can add is, right, when you come back in next time, the first question you ask is, did we commit to what we said? Because if you didn't, you've got to figure out why, because that's the thing. You've got to commit to it. That's going to be success. So next time, make sure everyone can do it. Everyone understands it, not just one or two. So then you can push them out again. Now, there's layers to this. What you can do is, if you see the same two or three players dominating that chat, when they're having a chat, just pull that one or two players out of the chat and just go, I love how you're controlling that chat. I need you to help me with the others. If you are quiet, can you help them get involved and ask them what they think? Can you do that for me? So although you may be shutting their voice down, you've done it in a way where you're developing leadership where they feel, oh, you've given me purpose, coach. Yeah, I can do that. And all of a sudden now they're going, Stevie, Sarah, what do you think? So now, and we're going, great, positive reinforcement. So now you'll start to see they're starting to engage more people. Now you can, if you want, start to cut that 2 minute time down to, we can get it with some of the teams down to 10 seconds, but you can definitely get it down to 30 pretty quick. Once you've had that and give it 6-7 goes, I guarantee you'll see more engagement than you've ever seen before. You'll see greater communication, greater purpose. What's important is you never get involved. You can only listen. The only interventions would be to pull those players out and just do that type of intervention. But you can't say anything when they're in those boards. And even if they look to you, make sure you're going, hey, it's not me. Yeah. Push them back in there.
Actively and stay out of the conversation.
Yeah, and they'll start to get engaged. All you're looking for is you read the board and you see, are they picking up what you're picking up? That's data capture for you. You're seeing who's saying the good stuff and who's not. And you might find some of the quiet ones all of a sudden are saying some real meaningful stuff that have never talked before. But now you've developed an environment where they can. And the other thing you're looking for is if they agree something, are they committing to it? Because that's an important factor as well, is if we say we're going to do something, are we doing it? Now, it may be after 30 seconds of committing to it, the opposition's changed something and you need to go, right, let's do this now. That's great. That's fine. That's another layer. But the fact you've agreed something you commit to, it's really important. And then when you get them in at the end, you just, there's some layers you can do with this as well. You can say is, okay, so, and it's judgment on this, there's no right and wrong. You might say, okay, can you share what you spotted in the strengths of the opposition? And then that team shares, oh, I saw this, you're really good. If they're okay and comfortable to, you can also do, can you share what you saw as a weaknesses in the opposition? Or you could do to the opposition, what do you think the strategy they came up with after each of the breaks to see if they could work out what the other players doing? You can give them a bonus point to go, if you could work out what they're doing, each one. So it's all that engagement. But at the end of that, you just say, how did you find that? And I guarantee they'll go, I loved it, loved it. I said, okay, great. I loved it too. I loved how you could talk and I loved how you were reading the game. It's brilliant. But I wasn't involved. But you were still coming up with it. I literally, I was just watching here and I loved it. So what's that telling you guys? And what's that telling me about what you're capable of? And use the language you want for the age groups. And every time you'll get is, oh, we don't need you to shout and tell us the answer as much as we thought we did. Okay, great. So one of the, I want to keep, then you can share, I want to keep this going. So I want to make sure now you've shown me that you don't need me as much as I thought. I'm going to make sure that we, if you think I'm talking too much, you can say, and it's age groups you can do, you can say, if you think you've got it and I'm talking, you can say pineapple to me. And if you say pineapple to me, I'm going to stop, I'm going to step back and you can go and play. But here's the thing, if you call it, you need to make sure everyone understands it. That's really important. Or with the older teams, you can just go, look, if I'm talking too much and you've got it, just say, coach, we got this. And I'll step back. But if I step back, you've got to be able to show me. So you're giving them permission to help you on something you've agreed is successful. So that's what I call the baseline game. So that's one thing you can do.
Mark, I love that. I thought I heard everything you'd said, but I've not even heard this one before. And I think it's brilliant. It's so simple, but it's so effective. You can just see how it would work. Why is it called the baseline game?
Because you're checking reality. That is what we're doing is hindering reality because we're not seeing it because we're interfering. So by doing that, what you're seeing is what they truly are capable of doing once you take you out of the picture and give them purpose and permission. So it's presenting a baseline of reality of what they can actually do without your interference.
And it's their reality in both in the sense of what you see, but also what they see, right? Because you're getting to get the whiteboard bit. So you literally are seeing it exactly from, it's brilliant.
Yeah. So your other layer to that is the other baseline you'll get is, you're spotting now is what where their game IQ is. You're spotting where individuals' game IQ might be that you didn't even realize. But you're getting a better picture then of what they're capable of right now and where their competencies are right now once you've set that environment up. And then also you've got a great reference to continue this in future sessions.
Superb. I'll interrupt though, but please carry on because you're in flow and that was a great start. Anything on top of that we could do as coaches?
Yeah, so there's layers to that. So what you can also do is, and this is where you'll have to listen to other podcasts, we'll run out of time on this, but the rule of three is a tool that can help develop this and cultivate it. But one of the things you can do here is you can give permission to player-led timeouts. So what we say is, look, if you guys are seeing things live that you want to change or you're communicating with somebody that you want them to move to help you be successful, and you can't figure it out, something's not happening, you can call a player timeout, but you only get 30 seconds. So that's not me involved. I'll stand and listen, but I won't get involved in it. But only call it if you can't figure things out live. And then the role of that is everyone sprinting. Then you make sure everyone understands, comes up with a success again, agree what we're going to do. Then you can go out and do it. So what that's giving is to say, look, our success is always be able to fix live. That's the number one. And we want to do this from the grassroots all the way through. And it's the difference between show me the answer, don't tell me the answer, which is another statement I often use with coaches, with players. And what I mean by that is often what you'll get is they'll play, whether it's half pitch or whatever they're doing, and they'll come in And then they'll tell you everything they did wrong and everything they should do right. And then the coach is really chuffed with that and going, that's great, brilliant, great answers. But actually, you shouldn't be chuffed with it. So the first question you should ask is, I love that answer. When did you recognize that? And they go, oh, within a couple of minutes, coach. Okay. What prevented you from committing to the change you've now told me that you can do? So what's preventing you from committing to it live? Because I don't want you to tell me the answer. I want you to show me the answer. So just to be clear with everybody, I don't care if it doesn't come off. What I care about is you committing to something you know you need to commit to that's different than you're doing now to be successful. That's our success. If we keep doing that, the outcome will come and it will never be guaranteed. So let me take that burden off you that I am not expecting the outcome as a measure of success. The measure of success is you're recognizing you need a change and you're committing to the change. That's where the success is. So what we're making sure is the hindrance isn't their perception of what we think success is. Well, I didn't want to change it just in case it didn't work. That's a false expectation. It's a barrier to the growth we want to build because, again, it's an outcome barrier.
The rule of three, which one of the first things I heard you talk about a little while back now, is fantastic. And we spoke about episodes four on the podcast, obviously not with you, but with other guests we've had on and stuff like that. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but we're touching it really, really gently. But it was the first one is you ideally want the player to see the problem first, right? That's the idea.
Yeah, so
then the team, and if not, then it's the coach. Is that kind of how it works?
So the simple thing is one is self. So that self, me being present, seeing all the options, committing to the choice, me doing me, the best I can with what I've got, being excellent.
As the player, as the athlete.
As a player, that's one. Two is, I'm doing that. I'm recognizing my peers need help, even in the behaviors or a choice. And now I'm reaching out to have an effective impact. And the effective impact's a key point. So the layers is, I'm reaching out. The next layer is am I adjusting my communication, what I'm saying, based on the needs of the individuals, because they're all different. I'm learning people then. Rule of three is one and two is not working. Coach is three. Coach then decides an intervention, which may not be stopping the session, maybe a little hot one-to-one. It may be, well, there's tons of interventions. You've probably heard, you know, resets, whatever it may be. But the coach is making a judgment now. But the coach is first going, I'm looking at one first. One's great. I'm looking at one. One's not effective. I'm looking now as a peer spotted that and have an effective impact. I'm seeing a peer going over, not having an effective impact, going again, not having an effective impact. Right, now I'm looking for, should it be another peer going? No, I'm seeing nothing. Now I choose. Now it's the three. And it may be I call the player over that went to reach out as a little hot one-to-one. Loved you reach out there. Talk to me what happened there. Well, I said this, but I just didn't get the three A's, which is the internally, if someone's reached out to me, internally, I'm accepting it, not pushing it away. Internally, I'm acknowledging it with voice or hand, and then I'm acting on it. So if I'm not seeing that, so I may pull the person that's reached out to go, oh, yeah, he didn't. So what else could you have done? What could you do differently next time? Or is there anything else you can do? Oh, I could say this. I could follow through again. I could get someone else. Okay, great. Bang, back out. Or it may be the person that didn't accept, I pull them out hot one-to-one, says, talk to me what happened over there. Well, Jimmy came over. I disagree with what he said. I said, okay, so, and then I can work through the action review process. I'll say, okay, what did we agree? Says, well, we agree if someone reaches out, I've got a three A's. Did you three A's? No. Okay, so next time, what are you going to do? If then it doesn't work, then I can step in. That's not a problem, but remind me what we agreed. So the game's still going on, but I'm doing these little interventions based on what I'm seeing using the rule of three as a framework. Now, there may be I need to pull everyone in. That may be an option, but it's not always the go-to option is the point.
Yeah. I like the fact that usually you'd go from like the coach to number two, because I think most coaches who even had the rule of three in place would go from coach to number one straight away to deal with the issue rather than actually let's keep trying to do that practice where we're trying to get the team leading it still. We'll have lots of coaches that will work with younger age groups, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, whatever. My personal view is this stuff does transfer down very nicely to younger ages, maybe surprisingly young age groups.
Yeah.
What's your take on that? And can coaches with little and still put some of this stuff into practice?
Yeah, it works 100% with that age group. I've seen it time and time again in tennis, in football, in rugby. Makes no difference. It's our limiting belief that's preventing their success. Also, it's giving them time to cultivate it and not give it one go and it's not happening. is build it, continue it. Because the other, let me link in another thing back on that rule of three, what we're talking about would be example you could use even with young kids, especially. I've got someone on the sideline who's injured, or, you know, we've got a lot of players, whatever it may be. I'm seeing that going on. And I say to the player here, okay, what are you seeing there? He says, oh, well, he's coming in and I saw him reach out, but I didn't see anything. I said, okay, so what do you think they could do there? He says, oh, yeah, we've got to stay wide. Whatever words they want to use, go, I love that. I'm going to call them in. Can you share that with them? Because you're absolutely spot on there. This is brilliant. Are you ready? Okay. So then they know you've got coach backing because they've said it. You're engaging them from the sideline now with purpose. Now they come in. It could be a 30-second timeout. Onto me, timeout. Sarah, can you just share what you shared with me there? Loved what Sarah, listening to Sarah, everyone. Then Sarah go, I can see you all, you get closing. And no, just stay a bit wide. It'd be easier if we just pushed out a bit. Great. Brilliant. Bang, off you go. Or do you need 10 seconds now to come up with your solution there? 10, 9, 8, bang, back out again. And it's so it's those little type of things. But you think about it now. What age does a kid decide what TV they like, what color they like, what games they like, what activities they like doing? They're making decisions all the time. When you step out of it, how much communication is going on between a six-year-old and a six-year-old? There's craziness going on there. It's only when we insert ourselves does it all start quieting down. Yeah. Oh, they're very quiet. You didn't see a 5 minutes ago being quiet. So we have to make sure that we're not the barrier to their growth. So it definitely works. And there's videos you've shared. If they follow me anywhere, you'll see videos of young kids doing all of this at really young. We had tennis players, Canterbury Tennis, as another example, of a great client. And they were really young kids. They had the big rackets with the big spongy balls, little nets. So all their thing was, we said success was that actually success is make sure you can't serve until the person is holding two hands and bouncing up and down. So you have to look for that. Then if they're not, you need to let them know. And if they let you know, what do you need to do? I 3A, so I let them know and I start jumping up and down. So that's something really simple. But what you start to see, whereas a coach would normally do the verbal remind, 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 coach has now stepped away. Person's about to serve. He's going, jump, jump. And then the person's now accepting and acting on the feedback of a peer. Now they're jumping, now they're going. And it's those little connections of purpose of something simple but success that stimulates peer-to-peer dialogue.
I think it's so exciting. Because if you can embed some of these things at a really young age groups, oh my gosh, where could you go for it when they're at 10, 11, 12, 13 and beyond? You know what I mean? If you get this practicing now, then like it make a massive difference. And look, Sarah's teammates, I'm sure, will listen to Sarah a lot more than going to listen to Scott, because like kids do. They're not, it doesn't always look like they are, but they do. When a peer's talking, the engagement's even higher, right?
Yeah, and they come into the nets and they do a review with each other. What did you do well? You know, what did I do well? And they share each other's. And we do that every time. We put a time constraint on it, which is another big one I'd say, Scott. This is the danger for coaches. If you're speaking for longer than a minute in an interaction of a group, people are going to get disengaged. So put a clock on things. My big go-to is get it down to 30 seconds as quick as you go. If it's mid-practice, 30 seconds. Yeah. That's all you need to get the point in. If it's between activities, it may be to explain what it is might take longer, but stood around in a group, again, if you're going over 2 minutes, you're talking too much. There's,
no one's listening, are they? No one's listening. You don't know what you're saying yourself. Yeah.
Keep it simple.
Just a couple of final questions. I'm pushing my time. I know I am with you, but we've spoken about some of these things already, but just some of the barriers, what things get in the way. I think we've mentioned confirmation bias already and maybe focus on the result rather than the process. But what are some of the kind of the big red flags to stopping these things from happening?
Really, one of the other big ones is really thinking you need to cover everything on your session plan. Do not. Best tip for me would have is two elements to add to any session plan is covert recall. And all I mean by that is, what did you cover in the previous session or two sessions ago?
Yeah.
And the first thing you do is you start the game and you're scanning for that. Don't tell them, don't remind them, because now you're connecting sessions. Based on that, that could influence what that content's going to be. They may not be ready. Back to the principle of we are where we are, be ready when we're ready. So that's fine. If that's fantastic, celebrate the success, celebrate with them a connection, and then with your other content, prioritize it. So if you've got five things on there, prioritize what's the number one and put number one And then once you've done the priority order, always follow this principle of never compromise one for two, and so on and so on. So if you only cover one successfully, it's success. Because remember, your journey is a pocket in their journey of life. So our journey might be a year, might be 6 months, might be 2 years, whatever it is. But our journey is over that 6 months, 2 years, and a year. Have I developed a better person at self and how they interact with the world around them? If so, great. Now, we all know that's not going to take a session. So never look at a session of success. Never put pressure on yourself. Look at it as a connection of sessions to slowly but surely engage the behaviors to stimulate the type of person that you want to develop. So when they leave you, you've had an impact on their lives long after your time with them has left. That's the key.
Mark, absolutely awesome. Thank you so much. You've been a star. There's just so much stuff in that. Like, I'm delighted. It wasn't necessarily my intention to save you for the 100th episode, because when we got that close, I've kind of waited for that. It will be the 100th episode, and I think it's a great one to put out there. There's so much in there and more we could have spoke about. I would highly recommend people dig out more of your stuff if they haven't done so already. I'm sure they have. If check out the website, other podcasts where you go into more detail on some of these things. But it's been absolutely awesome. Thank you so much. And we do ask all our guests this one question, and that is, if there was one thing you could change about sports, coaching, whatever, what would that be?
Getting people to understand what success is and not look at success as results. There's too much capability and parameters within that. And I take that across all age groups, from senior all the way down. You know, great coaching isn't about where you finish in the league, because you may not have the players. Great coaching is about what success is for you in that moment with them. And if governing bodies, if pundits, if parents all looked at sport in that set of eyes, it would make it so much easier for the coaches to be valued, supported, and help them to commit to the very elements they should be committing to achieve success.
Success is the development, right? It's taking what you've got, and if you can add value and improve it over a process and time, right? That's a success. Yeah. And winning stuff and trophies is all well and good. But actually, there's a lot of people can win stuff doing a lot of the wrong things, you know? And a lot of people don't win stuff doing a lot of the right things, and couldn't agree more with it. Mark, thank you so much. If people want to find out more about you, the work you do, or reach out, is there a good way of doing that?
All my stuff is PDS Coach, so Papa Delta Sierra Coach. That's Instagram. Twitter I use more than the Instagram. The website is there. There's lots of free resources on there, but there's also my online membership now, which is over 100 hours of resources, videos, interviews, tutorials, video examples to how you can, we're scratching the surface here, Scott, but how you can develop the process. So yeah, just that's where you need to go, really. I run one day masterclasses where an organization go, can you come to us? I'm there for a day. I can do a bit of theory, but then after lunch, put a team on a pitch and I'll take the team. You can watch me do this stuff live. And then we link in, also organizational support and change. But yeah, the PDS Coach is the way to explore my mad world.
Mark, we'll get the show, your website in the show notes. So the link's there for everyone to find nice and easy. Would you come back on again at some point in the future and dig down more deeply, maybe one or two of these talks we've kind of scratched the surface on? Would you be happy to do that?
Yeah, no problem. I think we'll do a win-win with that. So if your viewers, listeners want me to come on, then if they can reach out to you and share with them when they've listened to this, one, what they took from this and what they're going to do with it. So what they took from it and what they're going to do with it, not what they took from it, but they're doing nothing. And then the questions of, okay, what are the one or two things that I'd really like to understand better to help me be successful? So then if they can share that with you, that could give us content for...
Makes total sense. I love it. Look, straight away, you're putting the rule of three in there. Look at this. You get
there you go.
Reaching out to others to get back to us. Absolutely brilliant. Well, what we'll do is we'll put that in the show notes as well. Plus, when we put this out through Twitter, we'll add that in as a separate tweet so people can hopefully engage and share some of that and copy you in as well on that. Mark, you've been a superstar. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute honor for me to have you on the podcast. And the stuff you've covered has been sensational. Thank you so much.
I've got one question for you, Scott. I always show back. From this conversation, what's been the main one or two that you've taken from this?
Well, it's been refreshing because I think, you know, I have followed stuff you've done and stuff I've heard some of these things before, but obviously what you try and do is take your bits and relate it to your situation, don't you? So with our younger age group, what we found out is as we're getting into the competitive football, we're getting quotation marks, they go to under 12s next season. So in England, that means that anything becomes competitive. I think that's nonsense. Sport's always competitive from the very beginning anyway. So, you know, it just gives adults a reason to always make bad choices. Yeah. But what we want to try and do is give some of these players a sense of what's coming. And some are very kind of have a high desire to compete and lots of resilience in there, and others aren't quite there yet. So I've got to find a way as a coach in which we can help all the players have a level of desire to commit resilience is going to enable them to still enjoy playing football. And I believe part of the answer to that is in creating the self-managing team bit and helping them support each other, which is why I was keen to get you on and embed some of these things. So they're under 12s next season. I'm going to really start looking and introducing this rule of three into this. And we've done some foundation work around this about them taking responsibility and ownership, but I'm going to start embedding some of this stuff with them. So we'll use some practices. We'll use some work in which they can agree what is acceptable with regards to desire to compete and showing a good winning mentality. And when it falls below that slightly, how we could go about addressing that, them addressing that themselves first before the coach has to intervene. And that's where my head is. I've not quite got it just right, but that's what I'm hoping to try and achieve.
Yeah. And don't forget that baseline game's a good igniter of that.
You've got my Monday session already done for me. Yeah, honestly, sorted, I think it's absolutely the perfect game for right now. You don't want to go on the internet and find the first thing you find and just use that. But this literally fits in perfectly where we are right now with the age and stage of these players. So you've saved me plenty. You've saved me an hour and a half of prep for Monday night session, Mark. Thank you.
There you go. Awesome.
So, man, well, best of everything. Thanks again for your time. And I look forward to the next episode when we can get back on. Listeners told us they'd like to speak about in more detail.
No problem, Scott. Pleasure. Thank you.
Man. This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.